Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm Dot Ash.
With us today is Scott Ertz. Scott is a tech journalist, software engineer, entrepreneur, show host of F5 Live, and editor-in-chief of Plug Hits Live. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So, Scott, before we jump into Xamarin, would you just give our listeners maybe an introduction to yourself? Tell them how you got started in the industry.
Sure. Interestingly, I went to a tech high school, and the two things that I got into were TV production and software development. Those were the two passions that I picked up. I decided that I hated the TV industry because the personalities there just were not for me, and so I went down the software path, and fascinatingly, here we are 20 years later, and I'm sitting in a studio that is mine, where I produce my own 7 or 8 shows, in addition to being a developer during the day. I got into it because of high school and a dislike for TV production, and it has all come around full circle to this conversation right now.
Okay. So, yeah, talk to us a little bit about what it is that you're doing with all these shows and Plug Hits Live and everything.
Sure. So, Plug Hits Live is a kind of a big family of content, and our flagship show is F5 Live, Refreshing Technology. We're on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, and I, based on that smile, I'm guessing you got the joke. Not everybody gets the joke that the F5 key is the refresh key in the browser. We talk about gadgets, gaming, internet, and media. My co-host is the editor-in-chief of Tom's Hardware, Avram Pilch, and he will talk about a trending story from Tom's Hardware from that week, a review that they've done or are working on. He'll do hands-on with new products, things like that. But we also do shows. We do a lot of product reviews ourselves. So we do unboxings. We do how-tos on how to use some stuff. We had one product that we talked to at CES, and it turned out there was a big defect with the line, and we somehow became the voice of the product. It wasn't intentional, but I got an email from YouTube. Hey, this video's gotten real popular. we do a lot of that stuff. So we had to do some how-tos on how to use the product. And, we have a show about high school robotics and all kinds of stuff. So anything that's tech probably falls into our family.
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. And where do you find time for all of this and a career in software development?
Yeah, and if you knew the other things that I've got going on, you'd be even more surprised. I don't know. To be perfectly honest, I don't know how it all happens, but it continues to. Although, in fairness, I was, unlike events, I was getting a little burned out this year. And I was thinking, oh, I don't really want to do any events during the middle of the year, but I don't want to disappoint anybody. Oh, well, that one accidentally solved itself. But sometimes I get a little burned out, either from real life or, things around going on in the world. Last weekend we canceled our show because Tampa was on fire and my mind just wasn't on it. In general, I find it fun. I actually feel weird when Avram and I go a week without doing a show because we don't talk. So, that kind of thing can be energizing. So that helps.
So you and I got a chance to work together on a project not too long ago where we were working on a couple of different applications, one of them being a Xamarin mobile application. And that's the topic of today's show. So how did you get involved and started with working with Xamarin?
So I've always had an interest in minimizing code, whatever that happens to mean to somebody at any given time. And when the idea of cross-platform first started, obviously it was in JavaScript and HTML, and that is a sad world to be in. And so I was constantly on the lookout for something that was compiled and proper. And then I saw, you know, Mono had always been on the fringes, but had never really had a full development environment around it. And when Xamarin put, you know, a full environment around it, I'm like, ooh, this is the place. You know, I've tried other ones. There's one that I feel like starts with an M, but I know I'm wrong because that's Mono. But there's another one that's gaining some steam right now that's fun to play with. But I still think Xamarin is probably the most robust of the technologies. But, you know, I've just the ability to reuse, you know, 90% of your code, 95% in the project that you and I worked on together. It was 100% of the code between iOS and Android. It's hard to pass that up to be able to fix a bug one time, guarantee that your users are all having the same experience. It's hard to pass that up.
Yeah, it seems like 10, 15, 20 years ago, even the promise of cross-platform in Mac and Windows world with things like Java, where it was write once and test everywhere, because inevitably not everything worked appropriately out of the box across the multiple different OSs. It seems like...
And all depending on what JDE was installed. Oh.
Yeah, so it seems like that mobile is the new cross-platform headache, or has been in the last few years the new cross-platform headache. Is Xamarin enough to get us there to where it's not as much of a headache these days? And maybe actually taking a step back, what does Xamarin get us? And what is the promise there that helps alleviate some of those headaches?
At its very simplest, Xamarin gives you the ability to have one core library that can be applied to multiple UIs. Xamarin Forms, which is used to be the secondary cousin of Xamarin, but has taken over as the primary focus of Xamarin, adds on top of that the ability to create one UI that then applies across multiple device platforms and device categories. Because, you know, with Forms, sure, we usually think iOS and Android, but you can deploy to Tizen and Wear OS and Apple Watch OS and Apple TV and Samsung Smart TVs. That's just a huge category of devices that you can build once and deploy to. Oh, and of course, Windows and Xbox are obviously in that. Oh, and Mac. Mac OS is in that mix too. So, you know, the ability to build, for the most part, build a single UI and a single set of business logic, and then deploy it across all of your theoretical devices is wonderful. That's the promise of Xamarin. Does it 100% live up to it? No, because, you know, a watch's screen is very different than your Xbox screen. So, you know, the way you want to display information is different. The amount of information you may want to display is different. So, you know, when you're doing Wear OS or, Apple Watch or Tizen Watch, you know, you might want to do a different UI. But in theory, you can build it once and deploy it everywhere. Not recommended, but you could.
How does it stack up to something like a progressive web apps where you kind of get some similar stuff there where you're wanting one application, but you basically effectively need that web browser built on that platform to be able to run it?
not all the devices have that, right? You know, your wearables don't necessarily have that. I don't believe that there's a web wrapper that you can use on a Samsung Smart TV, or a Roku for sure. And I think Xamarin still targets Roku. So, you know, there's some that you simply can't do that with. But you know, if you're a web developer and your intention is to develop for, you know, your four primary targets, iOS, Android, Mac, and Windows, you know, a PWA is fine. If you're, you know, an annoyed former web developer, HTML, exactly. And you have thankfully escaped the world of HTML and JavaScript. Going back to it is not... Something is speaking around me. I have no idea what. But yeah, you know, going back to the web is not necessarily your thing. You know, Cordova was kind of the beginning of the PWA concept, and then Adobe bought its sister and everything got weird, and then the concept of PWA came about. And you know, that's great for you know, web focused developers, but you can ask Facebook how much they, a web based company, they stopped doing PWAs because of performance. So
I didn't know that part about PWAs. So that's really amazing. I didn't know that Xamarin could be used to make applications for all of those platforms. That would actually make me look into it more than I have in the past. If we could though, let's switch over to the patterns of development with Xamarin. Unlike, but also sort of like, web development, for the past few years, or, you know, up until recently, a lot of it's been using one of the MVSTAR patterns. Web used MVC because Rails, and MVP was a thing for a long time in the, yeah, in the...
Rails? I haven't heard that in years.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a dead thing. Don't tell anybody, though.
I don't think there's anybody left to tell.
MVP was a thing for... Well, there might not be. DHH made his money, though. MVP was a thing for desktop development and even suggested by Microsoft for a long time before the MVC thing lit up. But Xamarin chose to go with MVVM. Could you tell us a little bit about that pattern and maybe why that's the pattern that was chosen?
It's probably the pattern that was chosen because it was the pattern that Microsoft chose for Windows Phone 7, 8, 8, 1, 9, and Windows 10. So Xamarin was trying to stay in the ecosystem that Microsoft, you know, Microsoft built a sandbox and Xamarin was trying to stay within it. And in reality, MVVM versus MVC, you know, conceptually are similar enough that you can think back and forth between them. But with MVVM, instead of having a controller that is in charge of the UI, in MVVM, you have a view model that is in charge of maintaining data based on input from the UI, or vice versa. It does not know nor care about the UI, which is the big, you know, your big difference. Theoretically, and you know, when we're talking about being able to deploy across a zillion different platforms, you can build a single set of view models. You know, you have your models, which are your, you know, they model your data. They're where your things come from, right? They're your things. And then you have your view model, which is how you tell the UI to display your things, or what things to display. And then you have your view, which is how you display your things. So on a mobile device, you know, a list view may have, you know, two or three lines, but on a desktop, you might have a whole card with, you know, a larger summary, but on a watch, you may only have a single line. And so with that view model, you can build your views however you want, and neither care about the other, which is nice, especially when you're doing something, because with standard forms, you're building for, you know, your big three, Windows, iOS, and Android. And then outside of forms, you can build all your other stuff using new UIs on top of your view model. So when you're building in this concept, you know, the MVVM concept really makes sense that the view model and the view do not know nor care about each other's structures or setups or anything.
Okay. Never really. I've tried Xamarin a couple times, literally twice. something about it, I couldn't wrap my head around the programming model. And maybe I didn't think about it that way. That might be one of the reasons.
When the pattern was explained to me, it was brilliant. Because you know, I'm older than, you know, the kids in school now, it may not work for them, but for those of us who have been around for a while, not just in the industry, but using technology, think movie phone, right? It's the exact same data, no matter where you interacted with it. You could call them, or you could go to their website, and it was the exact same data. And it was likely, you know, if you were to build it today, it's the same view model. And the views were pushing buttons on your phone to say next page, or this one. And on the web, it was clicky, clicky, like a regular computer. But the logic is the same. The view model doesn't care how you selected that you want to see 300. It only knows that you've selected that, and it does things based on it. It navigates to the details on that movie, and it tells you show times and things like that on the phone and on the computer. It displays it all. So, you know, one view is entirely vocal, one view is entirely visual, but it could be built with the same view model and two different views on top. So once I got my mind thinking in those terms, it all just started to snap together for me.
Why don't you just tell me the movie you want to see?
That's always what I think when I use that example. Seinfeld.
And it also seems like there's a number of frameworks and libraries out there to try and make it easier. The promise to make it easier to manage the MVVM concerns. Like there's MVVM Cross, there's Prism, MVVM Lite.
And then it's also, even if you don't want to do that, it's easy enough to build your own MVVM framework if you want to build a pattern that's, you know, truly yours. The project that we worked on, the little one that we were working on, is together, was on a MVVM framework that we built entirely in-house. So it's not difficult to do, but yes, you know, there's MVVM Lite, there's Prism, there's these things out there that have all that stuff with relay commands all built and all those things in place, so you don't have to worry about that. And that helps a lot. And, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, all the other NuGet stuff, when you're dealing with .NET Core, so much of that stuff just works without anything special for Xamarin. It just works because that's what .NET Core is designed to do. So there's all these capabilities that you don't have to worry about. Signing into Facebook, you'll never have to write that code. There's 100 libraries for that, you know. So, yeah, things like that make it cool, too.
So then would you recommend any of the frameworks as a good starting point, maybe starting off with something like MVVM Cross?
So the simplest implementation, which is in its name, is MVVM Lite. I have interacted with the person who created the project. I believe that they're a Microsoft MVP, if I'm not mistaken. And it is a very light-handed implementation. There can be heavy-handed implementations. MVVM Cross is a very heavy-handed implementation that more models MVVM back to MVC. It's a little bit more heavy-handed in its pairing of the view and view model. So not only do you have to learn the pattern, but you have to learn the implementation. With something like MVVM Lite or Prism, they're both kind of light-handed implementations. So you can learn just what MVVM is before you start learning somebody else's implementation of the concept and their rule structure put on top of it. I used to use MVVM Lite for a lot of stuff. I'm now using the one that we built for that other project. There's a lot of them out there, but those are probably your big three. And I always recommend going with something light-handed so you're not trying to learn three things at once.
That is useful. We kind of talked a little bit about it, Xamarin Forms, but maybe we could dig in a little deeper. Where's the main value of it, and where would you not really would just steer away from using it?
If you are trying to do a lot of things that do not conform to the standard device UIs, Xamarin Forms is probably not the way to go. You might go to Xamarin Classic, or if you're trying to override all the default UIs, another library entirely may be the one to go with. I really wish I could come up with the name of that other one. I don't know why I can't right now.
You're not talking about Flutter, are you?
No.
Okay.
It's a Xamarin comparable thing. I think it might also be based on Mono. And the example app that keeps going out into the stores is the Microsoft Windows 10 calculator. It is matched UI for UI, pixel for pixel, which obviously, and that's the point, that doesn't conform to iOS or Android's UI standards even a little bit. Xamarin Forms is best when you're trying to conform to the device standards. So if you're doing a tab set on iOS, it should have an icon, it should have text, and they should be across the bottom. When it deploys to Android, it should be just text on a colored background across the top. Those types of things. And Xamarin Forms does all that for you. You say tab set. You create your tab content, and you say icon. And when you deploy it to Android, it doesn't use the icon. And when you deploy it to iOS, it does. It puts them top and bottom. So people who are familiar with the platforms know how to use your thing. But if you're trying to override all that, Classic Xamarin might be better. The other one might be better. A PWA might be better. If you're trying to do a cross-platform, single logic, but altered UI. If you're doing business apps, stuff like that, the standard control sets, generally the standard UI, you can make big changes, but it's a lot harder to make big changes in Forms than it is in Classic.
And kind of going back to the question earlier, like how is Xamarin compared to PWAs? This is definitely one of those areas where Xamarin's going to give you that almost native feeling experience while still giving you that single UI that you built.
Right? Yeah. And the thing that I like about Xamarin, both Forms and Classic, is that it actually does compile. It doesn't just compile, it conforms. So it transforms into a native running app. And interestingly, on iOS, the last speed tests that I saw, Xamarin Forms apps actually run 15% faster than proper native Swift apps.
Ha!
Which is impressive that you can beat the platform at its own game.
Well, have you seen Xcode? I mean...
only when I need to register a device to an app.
Yeah.
So maybe 15 minutes per project.
So any discussion on technology and coding and different OSs and platforms and things is inevitably going to circle around and get into games. Is there anything, any way to get involved in game development in Xamarin? And are there any gotchas, or are there any quick starts, or is there anything that you could either direct someone towards using Xamarin, or stay away if they're interested in games on phone and non-standard platforms?
Stay away. The mono implementation for game development is Unity. So if you want to do cross-platform, write it once, deploy it twice, game development, Unity. It actually is a mono implementation for gaming. So it's the same concept. Xamarin's really good at business stuff. Unity's really good at game stuff. Conceptually, they're very similar. Obviously, for gaming, MVVM is not necessarily your thing, because you're looking for as low latency as possible between input and output. And MVVM is not that. It's designed for data-driven business applications, and that's not a game.
So you can't just I notify property change whenever your character gets hit, loses a heart.
Okay, so just because I had to on Windows Phone 8 at some point, we did do a game in MVVM. Just, you know, when, because like you said,
John, so you're the one, right?
Actually, it was a challenge dropped by Joe Healy, who at the time was our Microsoft developer evangelist in Tampa. He put it down to, because I mentor a bunch of kids. We have a group called ASCII Warriors, and so we were at some Microsoft developer event, who knows which one, and Healy loved to just challenge the kids with like these. Always, Healy, we love you. They were dumb, and that was the point. The point was that they were dumb, and everybody knew it. And so he said, "You should try and do a game with MVVM." All right, it worked. Not well,
yeah. Just but it worked. Just because he challenges you doesn't mean you need to pick up that challenge.
You know, the things that he suggested were always fun and dumb. Like they were pushing the technology, which was his point. Because if you could figure out how to do a game using MVVM, well, then you've understood the concept pretty deeply.
I think that's the only mobile app that I've actually written was a D&D dice roller. It got deployed to the Windows or the phone store and everything. And then they were like, you got to update this and say if it's available for or if it's intended for children in China. And I was like,
Oh, that was the worst, wasn't it? When all those.
Yeah, every month I had to like recertify my app. And I was like, no one has downloaded this. No one will ever download this. The phone isn't even supported anymore. I quit.
The phone is not even supported anymore. Yeah, that really kills it.
It was a fun app to write, though. Speaking of the store, each platform has their own store. So how does when your app is finished and it's ready to go, how do you get it deployed to the Apple Store or the Play Store or whatever?
It depends on how DevOps your development environment might be. If you're, you know, just a solo developer doing your own thing, you have the ability to entirely build on your machine. It'll for iOS, it'll create an IPA. For Android, it'll create an APK, signed and everything ready to go. And then you just go to iTunes Connect and or the Android Store and upload your IPAs and APKs and go. If you're, you know, if you're a heavily DevOps environment like my current project, we use Microsoft App Center to do all that. It connects to our our Azure DevOps environment to our Git, pulls the code, builds it, gives us an IPA. For Apple, there's a process because they're not developer first. For Android, there's a way. This isn't my floor of the building, but I know that our DevOps team has it so that when a release build is built, it will push it as pending direct to the Android store, and it sits there waiting to, you know, have a description for the, you know, all the things that you have to do for a store upload. But you know, App Center does 90% of the work for us in that environment, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like the deployment story has really gotten a lot better in recent years, especially utilizing something like App Center, because it automatically gets a lot of the metrics for you. It handles all of the deployments and management on that side.
And then when you're doing test environment, you can skip the annoyance that is waiting for Apple to test your test app. It's like I have 3 of the 10 sections done. I want somebody to test those 3 while I work on the other 7. No, it needs to work before you can submit it to test flight. App Center doesn't care. They don't look, they don't nothing. Whatever you tell it to build and deploy, it will build and deploy. So that's really great. A great part of App Center is, you know, you can deploy and bypass the store, right? Actually, that was a topic on our show last night, is ways to bypass the store, because Epic Games is looking at bringing the Epic Games store to iOS and Android. And so we compared it to App Center and the ability to bypass the store and theoretically deploy a full application using essentially an enterprise certificate, which is how App Center works for iOS. It's a pretty clever idea. It doesn't require Apple to put their fairy dust blessing on your half done project.
So we've actually been developing a React Native app for iOS, and we've been using App Center, and we have certainly talked about using App Center for deployment instead of skipping the store altogether. But I think the organization has their own corporate store or whatever, so that we're going to go that route ultimately. It's been amazing, quite honestly, our experience being able to easily test it, easily push it out to the right devices, the right groups, automatically have all that that stuff happen. So yeah, a huge thumbs up to App Center, in my opinion.
I built, so for Tom's Guide and Laptop Magazine, they have a battery tester that they run, and particular Tom's Guide, they use it for iOS and Android, for iPhone, iPad, you know. And so I built the battery test for that, and it's done in Xamarin Forms. And we deploy it via App Center because there's no app timeout like there is in Test Flight, where you have to re-update it every 90 days, because we want a private distribution, but we don't want to pay for an enterprise certificate or all the things that Apple wants. So, you know, they were doing it in Test Flight before we moved over to App Center, and there's no 90-day timeout. There's no, you just install the certificate, download the thing, and move on with your day. It's wonderful.
So Scott, anybody looking to get started with Xamarin, are there any absolutely essential go-to resources that you could recommend?
So one of the best sites for Microsoft training is always Pluralsight. They've got a ton of stuff on Xamarin, both classic and forms, and MVVM just as a whole. We put together for our kids a resource page on the ASCII Warriors website, which is ASCIIWarriors.org. Yeah. Let's assume it's .org. It might be .com. I think it's .org, though. I'm panicking all of a sudden. And there's a whole Channel 9 series on MVVM and one on Xamarin, which is pretty cool. We've used those for a number of years because the ASCII Warriors did a Xamarin Forms project for Hillsborough County Library and then Pasco County Libraries, which was a tremendous amount of fun. They've both updated their systems, so the apps got pulled from the store, but it was a cool project. And that was how they learned, was the videos from Channel 9 and then having us around, obviously. But the Channel 9 stuff is always good. And then, you know, Pluralsight's always a good, if you've got a visual, any kind of visualstudio.com subscription, whether it be the free one or not, you can get a Pluralsight trial. So
very cool. So to kind of close in a little bit different direction, everyone that we have on, we ask them to sort of give some specific advice to folks who are just getting started or looking to level up their careers. Sort of what words of wisdom would you have for those people specifically?
Sure. If you're getting started, pick something that is a passion for you and build something around it. Doesn't matter what, doesn't matter how good it is. D&D dice roller. Great. You know, just pick something that is interesting to you and build something around it because you already have an interest in it. You know, for those of us in the industry, most of the time we're working on some weird client project that isn't necessarily in our interest. So, you know, that's not the way to start. Start with something that's interesting to you. Find some way that you can build something around it, you know, a data collector or a dice roller or some kind of something, and experiment with the technology and the frameworks from there. And if you are already in the space, don't stop learning. Always be looking at what the next technology might be, because I'm a big Xamarin proponent, and I have been spending a ton of time lately learning about Blazor, which is like almost a web extension of Xamarin, which is I can use my Xamarin view models on the web. What wonderful! So you know, constantly be paying attention to the industry. You know, the direction things are going and try and learn in those spaces. Doesn't have to be deep learning, you know enough to know that you can run compiled code in the browser now. That might be enough for now. Just, you know, stay aware of what's going on because you don't want to get surprised when Angular shows up like so many people did and the industry started to move that way and everybody was like, oh my God, I don't know what this is. So that's my advice for people who are in the space already.
For folks who want to follow you and sort of find out what you're up to next and so on and so forth, where can they do that? Where's the best places for them to reach you?
So the best way to see what I'm up to is Plughits Live. You can either do plughitslive.com or the short one, plughits.live. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Snapchat, on, you know, anywhere you might be, your podcast apps, wherever you'll find us. And that's where most of my public time goes. So that's the best way to follow whatever weird thing I happen to be working on at any given time.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Scott Ertz. Scott is a tech journalist, software engineer, entrepreneur, show host of F5 Live, and editor-in-chief of Plughits Live.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
Catch us live each week on Twitch, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach your potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.